Right. Next, what I want to look at are the key factors that the revenue tends to focus on in terms of determining whether it's employment or self-employment. And therefore, you need to be able to consider these, especially if there's an indication from the first stage that there's a personal service and perhaps mutuality of obligation to determine if there's a contract of service, if there's an employment. The first test, the control test. HMRC officers have a tendency to treat control as the most important factor, if not the only factor at times, and they have been successful in arguing that if the engager has the right to tell the worker how to do the work, when to do the work, and where to go and do the work, then that individual is most likely to be regarded as an employee. In the courts, in Ready Mix Concrete, Southeast Limited versus the Minister of Pensions and National Insurance, a very old case in 1968, it was held that the greater degree of control, the greater the likelihood that the person is an employee. In contrast, a working relationship that involves no control at all is unlikely to be an employment. Addressed properly, it's unlikely to be the deciding factor, but it might be important. In a more recent case, the question of control was considered. In Lewis, trading as Mal Scaffolding and others versus Revenue and Customs, a recent case that changed the landscape for status cases in the construction industry, but it has relevance as well on a wider scale. The Special Commissioner, Mr. Williams, followed the guidance given by McKenna J in the Ready Mix case, notably the three conditions for a contract of service. One, the servant agrees that in consideration of a wage or other remuneration, he will provide his own work and skill in the performance of some service for his master. Secondly, he agrees expressly or impliedly that in the performance of that service, he will be subject to the other's control in a sufficient degree to make that other master. Thirdly, the other provisions of the contract are consistent with it being a contract of service. In its application to Mal Scaffolding, the Special Commissioner said that there was no formal contract, therefore the third condition was irrelevant. The evidence to support the second condition was inconclusive, and his comments on the third condition was in the absence of specific contractual terms, it's difficult to identify any such term. He made the point that there was no holiday pay, no sick pay, no set hours, other than the hours of a particular site, no standard rates of pay or standard rates for overtime, no obligation to provide or undertake work, no period of advance notice that no work would be available, no notice period for absences during a period of work, and no notice period to end the relationship on either side. A special commissioner reached the conclusion that in the absence of documented terms of a contract and on the facts before him, the relationship between Mal Scaffolding and the workers was an undocumented contract for services and did not form any contract of service. Now, that's all a bit of a mouthful, and it may sound a bit complicated, but the point is that in that case, the revenue argued that there was control by Mal Scaffolding over the workers. The special commissioner said there wasn't sufficient control. If there was control in that case, it was by the main contractor, by the site rules. That's important. The next test I want to look at is the integration test, sometimes called the part and parcel test, which seeks to argue for employment if the worker has become part and parcel of the organisation. In Cassidy versus Ministry of Health, it was said that the more integrated the person is, or the more the worker is an integral part of the business, the more likely he is to be considered as an employee. However, the Ready Mix Concrete case suggested that this test raised more questions than answers. It really means, does the worker look as though he is an employee, a part of the business? And yet in many businesses, genuine self-employed workers will appear to be employees, but they're not because of the business relationship. Next point is someone in business on their own account? This could be described as the economic reality test, trying to determine if someone is in business on their own account, has a genuine business, in which case they are clearly self-employed. It was covered in the Market Investigations Case Limited versus Minister of Social Security. 1969, again an old case, but Mr. Justice Cook said, is the person who has engaged himself to perform these services performing them as a person in business on his own account? If the answer to that question is yes, then the contract is a contract for services. If the answer is no, then the contract is a contract of service. The application of the general test may be easier in a case where the person who engages himself to perform the services does so in the course of an already established business. In other words, the The revenue will often look at a situation and say, if we have an individual with no apparent business, they will want to argue that they are an employee. But if there is clearly a business structure, then they're more readily going to accept that this is a business on their own account, that the individual in the business is self-employed. As advisors, you need to look at that and to be able to establish if your clients are in business or if the people your clients are engaged in are in business, and can prove this factor to help the self-employment case. This leads to other questions and the need to look for other evidence of the existence of a business.